Welcome to Sharp Sharp for this week. We're recording live on Wednesday, the 29th of April. And it's fantastic to have you here with me, Rob Rose from Currency News, and Sukhila Majova from Scroller.Africa. It's been a fantastic week. Sukhs, how are you doing? Well, I mean, not so great if you're an illegal foreigner in South Africa, right?
It has been a very terrible month from Durban to Pretoria, East London. At some point, they were in East London. So it's just getting stronger and stronger, this march and march movement.
There's a sense that, like, we have an undercurrent of xenophobia that's building towards something quite destructive. You know, we've had waves of xenophobic violence in the past. I mean, do you feel like we're moving towards a situation where something might break at some point?
I'm suspecting, Rob, the situation could have been worse had the king of the Zulus, King Misuzulu KwaZulu-Thina, not intervened. Because what was happening, Rob, was that there was this build-up of anger and frustration and all of that that has been happening now, I think probably since last year during the height of the Spaza Shop situation, where a lot of kids got poisoned. And basically it was a situation of people trying to, or shop owners trying to manage infestation of rats and all of that. And they got rat poison, quite an extreme type of poison, which end up affecting the snacks and everything that the kids were buying. So a genuine mistake. And it turned out, because the Spaza shop were mostly owned by the foreigners, it then became a situation of the foreigners are poisoning our people and all of that. And it blew way out of control. And now, I think the Zulu king was able to realize that the hostels were going to take over this fight and turn it into something else. And he said, okay, I need to appoint somebody who's going to be the face of this movement, of this campaign. And he appointed someone called Phakela Mthakathi. A weird name, really. It really means dish food for a witch or a wizard. That's a very weird name, Phakela Mthakathi. So that's the man you see in front now leading these protests. So to an extent, now that there is a hand of a king involved there, you can expect that people in the hostels will not go overboard, because at the end of the day, they all submit to the king.
You know, I mean, South Africa is home to, 2.4 million migrants, which is about 4% of the population. So that's a tinderbox that, if lit, could be extremely destructive. And these marches that have been going on in the past week, I mean, I've seen signs by this March and March organization. And March and March is essentially, you know, a xenophobic organization. They want foreigners out. And they, you know, ostensibly they say we want illegal foreigners out. But the truth is that they're not differentiating between foreigners who are illegal and foreigners who are here legally. They want everyone out. And I saw a sign saying, you know, if fighting for my country means I'm xenophobic, then I'm proudly xenophobic. So this is what they're saying. So 2.4 million people against a rising tide of xenophobia, you know, it could go very badly wrong.
It could easily go wrong, Rob. There's no doubt about it. And it's no longer about illegal foreigners. It's about foreigners in total. You know, there seems to be a confusion that is being brought by the politicians here when communicating policy. For instance, to say that if you need to be in South Africa, you need to bring skills that we do not have here. You know. Now, there's a big differentiation here, because somebody who's just coming in to work in a mine underground with no real skill, that's a skill that we've got in abundance in South Africa. But also people are coming to South Africa to trade. You know, a lot of African people have been trading in South Africa, not necessarily interested in the land, etc. A lot of Mozambicans, Basotho people, Zimbabweans, yeah. A lot of our neighbors, they actually come to South Africa to trade. They are not interested in taking a site and all of that. Now, to say people coming to trade, you are against people coming to trade, there's a problem there, Rob. There's just a problem there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've seen instances where, you know, South Africans will stop people who are foreign and say, what skill do you have? I mean, that's just cannot be allowed to happen because, you know, the point is the government will assess this when they provide a visa. It's not up to individuals to decide, do you have a trade? And if not, you must get out of the country. And that's unfortunately what you're saying there is right, is that the ANC and parties like the Patriotic Alliance are completely creating and fostering this kind of xenophobia. And it's, you know, it just is a, I can just imagine that there will have to be violent repercussions from this.
Yeah, I mean, if you really go for the lack of responsibility of it, for instance, by now, some kind of strong intervention should have been made by the state now to try and manage the situation before it goes out of hand. I mean, it's going from major city to major city. And you're not getting anything coming out of government to try and deal with this thing. I mean, these are effectively illegal marches, but municipalities and metros have been forced to just approve these marches to try and get the police and the metro police to march with these people just to try and contain what could potentially become a very dangerous situation. You know, except for the president's message during Freedom Day, you know, even that message, you know, it was not really a strong message, you know, to say that people who are here legally must respect the laws and all of that. Now, from that message, he says, if you are in South Africa, we expect you to respect the laws of the land the way we would respect the laws of your country. That implication immediately drives the narrative that it is the illegal immigrants or it is the immigrants who are fueling crime in South Africa. Now, there is not much proof of that, but there is the head of state saying exactly that. It buys into that narrative and people now pick up from what he says to say we are actually justified in what we are saying, that illegals are actually increasing crime. Now, you and I know South Africa has been having a problem of crime long before the influx of illegals. We are well capable of killing each other here.
What you say is so important because I think that you're right. The authorities have done nothing to crack down on this. And I think that lawlessness is kind of made possible because of the leadership vacuum in law enforcement. We have a police service that is basically, you know, being replaced. All the top layers, as we said last week, have been ayatollahed. I mean, the entire leadership of the police is sort of in the dock somewhere for corruption. So we have a system where the police are doing nothing to stop this. So there's a sense amongst people that this anarchy is allowed to kind of fill the gap there. And that's been the big problem, is that because the police are so chaotic, people are just doing what they want.
Rob, if you look at the videos that are circulating, it's so funny. You have police officers taking pictures with the leaders of this march, you know, really running with them. You can see that they actually endorse it. But one of the big problems that we have, Rob, is the fact that we have politicized policing in South Africa. It has become a political issue. So even if the chief of police were to say he wants to uphold the law, he can read the political mood in the country, that politicians are tolerating what is happening. They are thinking that to an extent they'll be able to achieve some kind of whatever the agenda is to try and get rid of some of the immigrants, you know. If you look at, it's not just, actually, it is the ANC, it is the IFP. The IFP campaigned on this issue. They campaigned very well on this issue, especially of getting foreigners out of spaza shops in the township. Now, Patriotic Alliance, it comes out of nowhere, and there's not much ideological thinking that they are bringing apart from Abraham, which is they must go, you know, and a lot of it is just based on xenophobia, pure xenophobia. So there is a party, and it has been able to find its way into the government of national unity while it brings very little to the table, you know. So Action SA as well, Herman Mashaba, somebody who's supposed to be level-headed and all of that, but on this issue, sanity does not prevail. Unfortunately, for most people.
What is fascinating, though, is the Democratic Alliance, the DA, the second largest party in the coalition government. They have been, you know, quiet on this issue. They haven't really said much. I mean, is that a strategic move? You think that they're going to let the ANC, let Action SA burn itself to the ground over xenophobia? Or do you think that it's just they just have nothing to say? I mean, is it strategic or is it just where they are at the moment?
I think broadly the DA aligns itself with business in South Africa. And let's start with our immediate neighbors, for instance, Zimbabwe. You know, it's a country of people who are highly educated, who bring a lot of skills and experience, especially in hospitality. If you go into the tourism sector, the entire hotel industry, restaurants and all of that, those guys have got a lot of skills, but also in just the service industry. You know, service with a smile. You know, you go to a restaurant and you get a Zimbabwean chef. And I've had this experience many times. You know, the kind of service that they bring, you can tell that while Zimbabwe was still a good country, a lot of education was done for its people, especially in terms of how they conduct themselves in the tourism industry.
Mm.
So the approach to business is to try and get as many of these people into South Africa to get tourists to experience what is supposed to be service with a smile really in South Africa, you know, and also for the locals to actually learn from these Africans who are actually professionals in terms of running this particular very important industry with millions and millions of people coming to South Africa. So there is a lot of value, Rob, that immigrants are actually bringing to South Africa. We need to just change our mindset in terms of how we see it. If you look at Johannesburg, for instance, it's a home of immigrants. It's a city that was built on the backs of immigrants. I'm not sure you can really claim to own Johannesburg. Johannesburg is an African city. It's a center of trade, you know, so that attitude needs to change.
So, I mean, Joburg absolutely is the New York of Africa, and that you know, it reflects that migrancy in it. But the point is the DA themselves, they haven't actually fought the fight either way. They haven't gone out and said this publicly that, you know, immigrants are bringing a lot of value to the country. They've just steered clear of the entire conversation. And I wonder if they'll be allowed to do that for much longer, because it is going to become a campaigning issue for local government, and it is for the ANC and the Patriotic Alliance. Or if the DA can just simply stick to their guns and say, well, we're here to fix potholes. I wonder if the ideological issues, they'll be allowed to just get away with ignoring it.
Yeah, for now, Rob, the strategy of staying away from ideological issues is going to work for the DA, because in terms of ideological issues, I think it's something that they're going to have to sit down from the level of the GNU. At some point, there's going to have to be a sit down on foreign policy, on things like black economic empowerment and its effectiveness, on things like affirmative action, the Bella Act as far as education is concerned, national health insurance. Those are things that still need to be ironed out. So to an extent, if the DA plays into the space of ideological differences, they are not going to win. So right now, they need to just sell that where the DA governs, it governs very well. You know, not too much money goes missing. Although in recent times, well, we are increasingly starting to see a different story.
Well, we've seen the textbook scandal for the DA in the last couple of days, right? I mean, that's something the DA is not used to.
That is something that we are not used to. But I mean, we've seen a few scandals in Cape Town in the housing sector. You know, a metro, as big as it is, compared to other municipalities, tends to be given leeway by Treasury to say, okay, you've got housing capacity, you should be able to build 10,000 houses, etc. And we saw a number of scandals involved there. There was a DA person in Malusi Boy actually was charged, etc. So there are ongoing cases of scandals even within the DA itself.
So, I mean, in this case, what's interesting is that I suppose it's how you respond to these. There'll always be procurement issues. But the Basic Education Minister, Siviwe Gurube, who is from the DA, I mean, she essentially said, let's investigate this and find out what actually happened. I suppose when you have these issues, it's about how quickly you launch the investigation and deal with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was quite interesting. I wonder if Treasury is going to take her up on that, because she has asked Treasury to be the ones who investigated. An investigation by Treasury obviously will have a lot of credibility, because sometimes a minister would institute what they call the forensic investigation, and you never see that particular report come out because it implicates the minister's own people and all of that, just the whole procurement system in his or her department. But in this particular case, it looks like Sibuye Kwakhube is determined to actually get the entire truth out of the situation, and she has promised to deal with everyone who was involved in it.
That's fascinating, Zooks, because we're moving to something else, which is essentially, you know, Ramaphosa has now acted. Last week when we did this podcast, he hadn't yet suspended Fani Masemola, the head of the police, which he's now done. But someone he hasn't acted on is the social development minister, Sisisi Tolashe, who is the head of the Women's League as well. I mean, she's been an absolute nexus of corruption allegations for the past couple of years, right? I mean, she's been somebody who can't seem to walk down a road without causing trouble.
That's a very interesting development when it comes to Tolashe. I mean, we've been waiting to try and see what the president is going to end up doing with her. But if you look at the history of how the previous presidents have dealt with presidents of ANC Women's League, which she is, it has not been very good. You know, from Batabile Dlamini, who was also a social development. And again, this is becoming a trend where the president of the ANC Women's League is given that ministry, you know, to do with it as she pleases. And we seem to be in a situation like that even now. And this is not the first one. She went to New York with the staff, blew a lot of millions of state money. And you are wondering, you are the minister of SASA. What are you doing in New York? You know, yeah. But nothing came out of it. And now the latest scandal, well, it's not the only scandal. Because Rob, we are hearing now that in that department they forced a staff member to take a cut of the salary to pay for someone who's working at Tolashe's home in the Eastern Cape, not the official residence of Cape Town or Pretoria, but someone who's working at her home in the Eastern Cape, and this is coming from an employee in government in her office. This is sounding very, very bad, Rob.
So in this particular case, for those who haven't heard, I mean, what happened is that the ANC Women's League was given two cars, two fancy Chinese SUVs. And rather than declare it to the ANC, which she should have done to Lituli House, she registered the two cars in her children's names. Now, one of those children apparently sold the car. And then when the whole thing came out and they were forced to hand it back, this child apparently bought a different car and handed back a different car to the ANC at Lituli House. I mean, that's staggering that this happened. The fact that this wasn't disclosed is in itself, you know, absolutely impeachable, don't you think? I mean, I don't know how you stay in a party. This looks like outright theft. I have to say, looks like, considering we're in the media and we don't like getting sued too much. But yeah, absolutely.
This story is crazy, Rob. And had it not come out publicly, trust me, those cars were never going to come back. I mean, this is not a news. This is not something that happened last week or 2 weeks. You know, look, again, nothing is going to happen to her. This is the unbelievable part of it. Nothing is going to happen to her. I mean, there were many, many instances. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's because of the proxy of the ANC Women's League in the ANC conference. Because remember, while you've got ANC delegates, the ANC Women's League has got a certain number of delegates that they have, and the ANC Youth League has got the same number of delegates. And when a conference is deadlocked, you actually depend on those guys to actually flip the entire conference to your advantage. And to an extent, Ramaphosa, for the past two conferences, has been in control of the ANC Women's League vote. They've given him a lot of backing. And Tolashe has been right at the forefront of ensuring that. So once again, we've got a situation of Ramaphosa owes certain people certain favors, and it's very difficult to dismiss them all the way to the likes of Senzo Mthunu that you are still stuck with.
So, I mean, I'm still, it sounds ridiculous to say, but I'm still an optimist, despite being a journalist. I think you're very cynical about this. I'll take your bet that there will be action taken against her and that she will have to stand down eventually. It's my optimism that keeps me still believing that. But I absolutely think there has to be accountability for this. And I think that even in the ANC, people are not happy with her for taking these cars and not declaring it. And there has to be consequence. I know that, you know, there's this documentary out this week with Winnie Mandela, which is fascinating. But Winnie Mandela was held accountable by the ANC back in the 90s. I mean, I just don't think this is the party that would still allow this to take place.
Now, you are comparing apples with oranges now, Rob, or maybe apples with potatoes, really, because now the kind of ANC that you are talking about had very strong leaders, people who took very tough decisions, you know, Nelson Mandela, against the entire ANC, took the route of democracy, took the route of the GNU at the time, a very, very unpopular decision. But he was able to say, this is the way and you are going to have to follow me. You know, so this is the different ANC right now. You know, if you look at Ramaphosa, how he has been winning, he wins right at just about 55% of the conference, hardly ever reaches 60%. So if you've got 45% of the conference, still people will back Jacob Zuma faction, even though he's gone, but the remnants of that faction, Paul Mashatile's, etc. It's very, very difficult when you don't have the full backing of the National Executive Committee. So I think whatever Ramaphosa wants to decide, or even whatever his wishes, it's very, very difficult to actually implement it at the moment, Rob.
But it's, you know, he talks about renewal, right? And part of renewal are these associations of the ANC, these kind of like these structures. The ANC Youth League has been a disaster since Julius Malema's time. You know, allegations of being completely co-opted and bribery and all kinds of things right down to the Brett Kebble era. So the ANC Youth League hasn't reformed. The ANC Women's League now is pretty much, like you said, from Batibile Dlamini to C. Toloshe, like they basically are the place where bad things go to happen. This cannot, if the organization is intent on renewal, I think this is where it should start. And this tells the lie to any efforts by Ramaphosa to reform the ANC. Does this mean the ANC is just ethically dead? I mean, I think it's these organizations should prove it, right?
We are dealing with factions, Rob. You know, renewal needs honesty, you know, and you don't have honesty right now. Ramaphosa is very strong on people who are against him. I mean, even if they are powerful, I mean, the Secretary General of the ANC, it's Magashule. That's a powerful position. He was dealt with effectively. He is being prosecuted for like a normal criminal, you know, and it's ongoing. It's in your face. Everybody can see. So you can see how ruthless Ramaphosa can be if you are not his camp. And this is part of the criticism about why this renewal is not working, is that he seemed to target people who are not in his camp. Those who are in his camp tend to survive. Senzo Mthunu, CCC Tolashe. You can see the tolerance of some of the people who are in his camp, Fikile Mbalulas, etc. All of those people, there are files against them about all sorts of things that they have done. You've got people in government who were implicated in the Zondo Commission. Those people are still there. So the president can be ruthless if you are against him, but he's very soft on those who are with him.
I've never seen him be ruthless ever. I mean, even Ace Magashule, I mean, you have a sense that it was somebody else who drove that. Others in the ANC drove that. I mean, Ramaphosa, I mean, he's the master of diplomacy. He's not a guy who ever takes a hard decision.
Well, the Ace Magashule one was quite something. I mean, look, it's not easy to let go of a sitting secretary of the ANC. What you do, you wait for conference. You try to unseat them at conference. The situation with Tolashe, for instance, because there's an elective conference coming up, the leagues are preparing for their elective conferences. Her term is going to end. She's not going to get it renewed. Someone else is going to come in. You see, that's how they are going to offload her. Otherwise, she's not going to be offloaded while she's still in office.
Okay, so the bet is, I say $1,000 on her getting removed before then. So I suppose I could use that, right?
or maybe move to a different ministry, etc. As we saw with Simelane, was implicated in the VBS scandal. She used to be Minister of Justice, and instead of being kicked out, you know, for very, very clear corruption, she's still in government.
So as a final thing before we wrap up, I think, you know, we have taken a lot of pot shots at the ANC and talked about the kind of institutional degradation. But I think it's good to talk about, Zux, the extent to which a DA minister is now caught in another, well, not quite a scandal, but certainly a delusion. Solly Malatsi, the telecoms minister, the communications minister, launched an AI policy and then embarrassingly had to withdraw it because this AI policy itself had AI delusions in it. I mean, Zooks, isn't that just incredibly embarrassing? It indicates, well, you know, when the revolution comes and the robots are here to take over, we won't be able to organize our rush for the exit even.
It's a very unfortunate situation for Solly. I mean, this is somebody I really, really like, his potential and all of that. You know, he admits that this is a very embarrassing situation. Look, Rob, this thing is going to happen to a lot of professionals at university level, professors, people doing PhDs and masters. You know, the whole thing about researching with AI, researching in general, even before AI, it's a very complex thing. You've got to be sure, you know, you've got to credit properly. You've got to make sure that you've actually studied the stuff, quote the textbook. Don't assume that what you are quoting is actually in the textbook and credit the wrong people or for something that does not even exist in that particular textbook, which is what happened in this particular case. You know, there's nothing else to say, Rob. This is very embarrassing for Solly.
It's embarrassing. I've seen it in international news websites and international news services. I mean, what Solly Malatsi said is that, you know, this is not a mere technical issue. This has compromised the integrity and credibility of the entire draft policy. The most plausible explanation, he said, is that AI-generated citations were included without verification. You know, he says this shouldn't have happened, and that's pretty obvious. But it's staggering that it could have happened, that you have people in the department who don't check this. You have the sense from the outside that we have a well-oiled machine. People are paid millions to make sure they get the stuff right. And then you have something like this, which just shows that, you know, we're half a step away from incompetence. I mean, that's the scary part, right?
That is absolutely a scary part, Rob. Look, government, Rob, increasingly now has got every department being given to a different party, you know, tends to be staffed with people from that particular party as opposed to professionals who have proven themselves, who have got credibility and all of that. So you are always going to get caught in a situation like that where the entire department is actually a political party and we as ordinary South Africans are not expecting that. You know, so you are always going to get caught in these particular situations. You know, but previously, Rob, the way it worked when it comes to drafting policy, politicians will draft policy and they will send it out to professionals, to specialists in that particular field, you know, professors and all of that. Those people will actually look at the policy and go back to government. You know, we've been having this cry for a long time in South Africa about the exclusion of professionals, top professionals in policy formulation, be it education, things like Bella Act, NHI. There are professionals sitting at universities who can give us this advice for free and actually broaden and deepen and enrich what policies we're talking about. If you look at Parliament now, there's so much of the policies when they are challenged in the Constitutional Court, they actually don't stand. And you are wondering what happened here? Where were the professionals? So this increasing anti-educated people approach in government is a problem. Jacob Zuma used to talk about clever blacks, you know, branding everyone who appears to be a clever black as a counter-revolutionary. So a lot of people sort of pulled back, you know. So we are now poorer for it, Rob.
So it's strange. I mean, I suppose we need not just the old professors, we need the young people too. There's a friend of Mungo Sogot from Scroller. He was telling us about this, a friend of his, an old lady who said that actually it's really simple. There's a guy you call on the phone and each time he answers you and tells you exactly what you need to hear and provides the answers, a guy called Chad Duplessis. And I think that maybe there was too many Chad Duplessis being called for this AI policy and not enough real people.
I think we're always going to need real people, Rob. You know, with us being in the newsrooms, etc., you know, increasingly we are using AI to check things, to edit this, to improve that copy, clean up here, clean up there. But at the end of the line, you've got to have real people, real professionals with lots of experience to make sure that the news copy is still clean.
Okay, well, I suppose if anyone out there spots Chad Duplessis running around and not on your phone, please give us a call and let us know where we can find him. We'll definitely have him on the next show. Otherwise, that's Sharp Sharp for this week. And thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.